Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com and MSNBC.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. Welcome to this edition of the Sports Reporters podcast. We do it every Monday and Thursday. Yeah, it's the podcast rendition of the long-running television show Sunday Mornings on ESPN, but twice as nice because we get to do it twice. And Mondays afford us great things because the weekend finishes up and we can wrap up things like golf tournaments and others. And, of course, playoff rounds, and I think they've stopped playing between Toronto and Milwaukee. It did take two overtimes, and there weren't that many guys left on the court when it was all said and done, including Giannis having fouled out. But I thought it was a statement game by Toronto, and obviously they had to win it. Kawhi Leonard, despite the fact that he got hurt early on, was a marvel to behold and real leadership. And this is a series now, it seems to me, as they win 118-112. What do you guys think?
Well, it was a slog. I mean, it was like a 10-9 baseball game filled with errors and home runs and base running mistakes. I mean, it was not a clinic at the end of regulation. It was not a clinic at the end of the first overtime. It was not a clinic at the end of the second overtime. My takeaway, even a diminished Kawhi Leonard stepped up yesterday and scored 36 points and made big plays at both ends of the court. But I walk away from that game wanting to see how Giannis is going to respond in the next game. Because before we started today, I was quoting Dan Jenkins to Bob and saying, Mitch, that it's all been pretty much bluebirds and lemonade for Giannis up until this point. And he did get a whole bunch of rebounds last night. But if you were watching that game and somebody said to you, hey, one of the best players on the planet is in this game, you would have said, which one other than Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, that's true, but I don't discount the 23 rebounds.
No, it was great, but Bob, able to throw the ball to your best player in big moments, and they could not do that, and his free throw shooting is becoming an issue too.
It is an issue. It was 2-for-7 last night, but don't discount his 7 assists either. But you're right. You're right, Mike. I think this is a challenge. Great. This is his evolution.
Good.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is his crucible. He's never been in a playoff situation like this. They've been before, and in a circumstance like this, this is going to be a real test to see if he is an MVP level player. I like the one word that I harped on or jumped out at me when you were discussing Kawhi Leonard was the word both, because his defense.
Oh, the steal was great, Bob. That was a great defensive play. Oh my goodness, what a great play!
And as they described him, what a pair of mitts! The guy's hands are ridiculous.
His basketball instincts are tremendous.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player and an all around player. And that emphatic dunk on that break, by the way, that was a hello.
There were a couple exclamation point plays by him, but interestingly, they didn't end the games. You know, like then there was another exclamation point game. And you know, Mike, your takeaway was interesting. I have a different takeaway. Toronto absolutely had to win this game. It was back home. The place was raucous. There were more people outside than inside. And they had to go to double overtime to get rid of Milwaukee on a night when Giannis was off. So that says to me they have their work cut out for them. Kawhi was great, but they can't just go with Kawhi. I mean, you know, their bench was kind of exposed. You know, they had to use them. And
Hill saved it, Mitch. Hill made the biggest shots of the night for them.
But they you know, if Giannis comes back strong, I still think Milwaukee has the upper hand in this thing. Siakam put him in a tough position by missing those free throws. And when I say tough position, you say, well, they won. And they won, but they had to play a lot longer than they needed to. And Kawhi Leonard had to play a lot longer than he needed to. And they got to come back and play again tomorrow night. So, this is still Milwaukee's series, in my opinion, to lose.
Oh,
very close.
I completely agree with you. And I'll throw this to Mr. Ryan, okay, like throwing him the ball on the wing, okay? Chris Middleton, pick up the white courtesy phone. I mean, three for 16 last night, okay? Yeah. For 16. He and Giannis are 8 for 32 combined. And his job is wingman. And your job as wingman is to step up when the star player is having the kind of shooting night that Giannis went. And Middleton did the opposite last night, Bobby.
Yeah, you're right about that. But they did get a boost. They got 44 points off the bench from Brogdon, who I love.
Brogdon,
and Hill, who's a seasoned pro. And you're right, he had a huge, huge 7 for 9, by the way, for him. Yeah, you're right about Middleton. This is why it's sports. You know, we you don't know. And I'd say this, that would have been. And see, I categorize losses. This would have been a horrendous loss for Toronto in that
season.
Well, number one, it would have been a horrendous loss out of any context, but especially in this one, because they led from 3-2 or 4-2, whichever we gave them their first lead, until into the second overtime, and Milwaukee had never led, and that was their game to control. They had the chance to win it at both the end of regulation and the first overtime. They did have the two terrible clunkers by Siakam in regulation with 7.4 seconds to go. They had Leonard had the last shot, so this would have been a terrible loss, but
hey,
it wasn't a loss.
Yeah, it wasn't a loss, but it was an almost loss, and 54 points off the bench for Milwaukee, and if not for Powell, the Raptors are 2 for 9 from Ibaka and 1 for 11 from Van Fleet. So this is what I say. And Danny Green. So this is why I say tomorrow night's going to be interesting, because they're all going to be tired. Leonard's going to be tired, and they're going to need that bench to provide at least some relief minutes. And bench against bench right now, it didn't look much of a contest.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time that three guys in the starting lineup had this stat line. 5 for 16, 3 for 16, 3 for 16.
Yeah.
Bledsoe, Giannis, and Middleton were 11 for 48. And yeah, it's a good thing the guys came off the bench, because you kept looking at the way they were playing and thinking, how the hell are they even still in this game?
That's why I'm saying, you know, look, we have to recognize about Giannis. And to his credit, he said it in his post-game comments last night. He keeps saying it. You know, this is my first time here. And we've talked a lot about this already on the show in previous episodes about the experience factor when you get to a conference finals and when you get to a finals. And Kawhi Leonard has all of that. And he can lead his team in a way that Giannis just can't just yet. And yet and still, as a complete team, they have more cylinders to fire on than the Raptors just relying on Leonard. And the rest of the guys have to step up. Lowry had a couple of key moments and key shots. But, you know, if he's at all hurt, and I know he shrugged it off and he said, no, I'll be fine. But he got hurt early in that game and then played on top of it. He didn't get hurt late and then goes and rests it. If he's at all not 100% tomorrow night, and
what
Milwaukee
about Kawhi,
takes it,
Mitch? I mean,
that's
Kawhi
what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about Kawhi. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, listen, when you look at this team, I think we were all in agreement last week. There's more to the Bucks than there are to the Raptors, despite the fact that the Raptors had a wonderful regular season. And maybe if you want to be a glass half full guy, you've made this point already today. Maybe the Bucks ought to be encouraged that they were still playing basketball in a double overtime last night because of what had happened to their frontline guys. But
I think they are, Mike. I think they should.
But
absolutely.
When you look at these two teams, Bob and Mitch, do you have any doubt that the Bucks are the better team?
Team, no. I have no doubt. Team, no. Do they have the best player? I got to see the series play out. I mean, Kawhi, you don't dismiss him because of his defense as well. Like we talked about that play, where he steals the ball and dunks it late in the game. That's critical. So best team, yeah. Bet thicker team, yeah. But, you know, many was a time that there was a thicker team up against a LeBron James-led team, and the LeBron James-led team won. So I'm not saying that that can't happen.
And by the way, about Siakam, the clankers are right. But other than that, that guy played a wonderful game last night.
He's had some good games in the playoffs. He's an emerging star, and that's that. No question. But those free throws did hurt, and free throws so often are determinant.
But wasn't it great to see Toronto? The city and the fans and everybody going so bananas. I just love that. You know,
one week after the shot, they're still riding that wave.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's not their sport. I love it because it's not even their sport. They're in the same gathering spot as we saw them.
Are you sure that hockey is still their sport, Bob?
There was nothing that would please the citizenry of Toronto more than seeing a Stanley Cup being paraded around.
I'm saying they play basketball a lot better than the Maple Leafs play hockey. That's all I'm saying.
And this is great. And it's a good ongoing, it's a great month for them. And this is their... No, I'm happy with the resonance of this sport in that city. Of course, you do remember, of course, that it was a charter member of the NBA and the very first game was played in Toronto when the first basket was scored there, but we won't go there tonight.
We all remember that.
Okay, you all remember that. So just keep that in mind when you talk
about it. But I do like the fact that we got two teams that look like they're – well, I can't say anything about Toronto because I don't know if Kawhi Leonard is going to be there. But for discussion's sake, say that he comes back. You got two teams that could be around for a while that are not Cleveland or Boston, or the same teams that we've seen over and over again. And it's good for the East. It's good to get some rising superstars and establish something to look forward to in the Eastern Conference Finals. We already know the West is loaded and loaded with superstars and loaded with teams that... too many and deserving ones get left on the tracks before the finals, but this is good to see in the East. I like this.
And Mitch and Bob, who told Fred VanVleet that he was the guy who was supposed to win the game yesterday? holy
you
crap.
Mean after 10 misses that he shouldn't have figured that out?
I mean, and Kawhi kept throwing him the ball, and I'm thinking no quarters? Don't do it, don't throw him the ball because he will shoot it if you throw it to him. Hey, how about Middleton's three? Bob, what was he thinking there? With a chance to win the game, and he's got three guys around him. There's still, 7 seconds left on the clock. He pulls up and fires that ball up, and I mean, I know it caught some of the rim, but what the hell's he thinking there?
He's thinking, hey, if Steph can do it, if Damian
he's thinking, I'm Fred VanVleet, damn it.
Why can't I do it? You know, they're flawed. You know, there's a
Fred VanVleet.
You can't have a great anything. You
don't
cannot
you know
have,
who I am?
You cannot have a great game without.
But that was a hideous shot, Ryan.
Yeah. All right, I'm not going to be his defense attorney. Trust me, I'm not taking the case. I agree with you.
Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today. All right, let's move on to tonight, which may just be a formality, because the Golden State Warriors, Bob, when you said easy six.
I was wrong.
Does easy six mean four?
Easy six.
Is four the new easy six, Bob? Is it?
No, it just means that it was a bogus prediction. It was fake. It was a fake prediction.
Fake news.
Fake
well,
news.
I mean, so what do you guys think that Portland? I mean, clearly Damian Lillard has been, and now we find out that there's some physical reasons for this, but he's been clamped down since this started, and the Warriors had a great plan for him. And the other day when they were, I don't know who's doing the game. I guess it was ESPN's doing the game. And one of the analysts said, so, you know, what's happened to Damian Lillard? And the answer from the other analyst was the Golden State Warriors. what happened to him. They know how to play him. They know how to shut him down. And I mean, are we lamenting the fact that Houston was the second round instead of the third? Is Portland the wrong
what,
team
Mitch,
to be playing?
Mitch, I was thinking this as I was getting ready for the podcast today. You know what the Houston Rockets are kicking themselves for doing? Getting off to a slow start in the regular. You know how we always say, "Oh yeah, it's November, it's December." Guess what? Those games count, and they have to be looking now at Kevin Durant's injury and thinking, if we had played better during the regular season and been seated where we were supposed to be seated, seeded, we would be playing in the conference finals, and maybe there's a whole different narrative being written.
Yeah. No, sure. Well, that's true. That's true. But as far as, you know, the series that we do have is concerned, it just keep looking more and more like Golden State is just, I won't say toying with them, but they are absolutely, they're having fun. They're winning while having fun. You're not supposed to be having fun.
It was fun,
in
but
the
Bob, the Trailblazers are playing really well for a long time in that game the other night.
All right. It was 60-42.
It wasn't fun
one
then. It wasn't fun
and,
then.
And so from that point on, it was 69-39, favor of the Warriors. And but yes, they had a great stretch. And Myers Leonard was leading the way. And you know, great, and making Terry Stotts look great
by the
lineup
two,
change.
No, two last names. It's never good. It's never
Myers,
good.
Myers
I don't care.
Leonard,
yeah.
Well, the Warriors now have they've now have 22 consecutive series with at least one road victory. And you know, so they don't play the game of we win at home, we lose the two on the road, and as long as we have home court, we can always win a game seven. They take them on the road, and of course when you take game three after you've won the first two, you basically shut the thing down. And you know, the fact that this is all happening without Kevin Durant or Cousins, and they just have reverted to like, okay, we pull out the other template.
I don't count Cousins though, Mitch. I didn't.
He's a body.
He wasn't there. It's like he was never there. Yeah,
but he's a body. He's a body. He's six fouls. He's some points. He's some rebounds. He's a body. He's not on the team. You got to mention his name. But you know, I think they just pull out a different template and they say, okay, we'll play Golden State Warriors basketball from 3 years ago, and we can win that way
that's
too.
Exactly
and
what they're doing.
That's just remarkable.
All right, can I ask this before we move on? We have to a celebration of Draymond, a celebration of Steph, and then all the drama with Durant. Okay, can we agree that as great as Michael was, and I always tell everybody, Michael was the main event of my sports writing career. I saw him from North Carolina all the way to the end of the show. But that the Warriors have played a better class of competition at this time of year than Michael's Bulls did. And I know you only can play who you can play. But when you factor in LeBron and then what they've had to go up against the Rockets, can we at least agree that even if they don't get to six, that this is as worthy a run as Michael's 6-0 finals run with the Bulls?
I'm not prepared to go there only because I don't want to. I'd have to take a little investigation. You may have done more. You've done maybe a little homework on that.
No, I'm just talking about the Jazz and the Sonics and, you know, like that. And a diminished Lakers team.
I think as I recall it, and Bob, I'm going to defer to your memory because it's always better than mine in the NBA. But as I would recall it, and, you know, I saw a lot of Michael, obviously, because of the Pistons challenges. So I saw a lot of that run in person. They had a harder time, or just as hard a time, coming out of their conference in those years, you know, beating the Pistons, beating the Knicks, Boston, all that. But they didn't face the quality competition in the finals quite like I think Golden State has had to with LeBron-led teams, and you know, which is a big part of what they've done. That would be my quick assessment. What do you think,
Bob? I mean, there was you know, the year they played Portland, Portland was good, and Drexler was being held up, unfortunately for him.
As Michael,
you know,
right?
As Mike, as the answer to Michael, and then I played the Suns, and there included a couple of epic games, and that was Charles's big year as the MVP, and he was being held up, and you know, in his way, and of course that was
they beat the Lakers that one time, but those weren't the '80s, obviously.
All right, and then in the second go round, they got Utah twice, and Utah had one great shot, and they win game one, and Karl Malone, the most overrated great player in the history of not only America, basketball, but any sport, but in the history of mankind.
Tell us how you feel.
How he just drops those in like
missed
rim
winning
shots,
free
Mitch,
throw
don't
game,
you?
And then had the ball stolen by Michael in a propitious moment from behind. Never would have happened to, you know, really great players. But where were we? Oh yeah, they beat the Jazz twice in their prime and. It's a good point, Mike, though. The West has been loaded for half a dozen years or more. The West and the NBA has been a minefield for anybody.
Okay, let me ask Mitch a question now. Mitch, would you dispute the fact that despite the greatness of Kevin Durant, the Warriors are more fun to watch when he's not playing?
Fun, yes. Better?
No, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I love the Golden State Warriors brand of basketball from pre Kevin Durant. It was the closest thing that we got to Globetrotters basketball in actual real competition NBA. And the shooting. I mean, you know, your jaw drops more when you watch a Golden State Warriors game than any other team, I think, in any other sport.
It's so
Am
true.
I right? They are. They yes, should be nicknamed the jaw droppers because you go, that can't go. Oh, your face goes. Oh,
he that's a that fast break. Wait, he stopped by the hot dog stand.
Right, he threw it. Oh, and whether it's him or Klay Thompson or a bunch of other guys who will hit those shots periodically. They are a lot of fun to watch. And obviously they know that they're not playing with a cushion. Look, we talk all the time about athletes, great athletes' awareness. They really great athletes, superior elite level athletes, they know when they're supposed to win and they know when they're not. They know who they've got. They know when they're really in trouble and when they're not. And they also know, I got Kevin Durant over there. I can always toss Kevin Durant the ball, and Kevin Durant, and I can sit here and we'll stand here and watch, and he's going to score a 3-pointer, and we're going to have 3 more points, and I'm going to backpedal down the other way, and we're going to win this game. When you don't have that mentally, and you know we can't just give it to Kevin, you play differently, and that's what they're doing, and that's why this is such a great testament to them, because right in the middle of being in that one mental frame of mind, they literally had a downshift and go into an entirely different frame of mind, and they did it without missing a beat, and reverted right back. It's like muscle memory. They reverted back 3 years ago and are playing a wonderfully watchable game. And the best thing for them is that they can wrap this thing up tonight. They can all get some rest, and then the question becomes, how long does the? Although I think the finals are pretty much set anyhow, right? May 30th, I think they start no matter what, right? Like even if they finish quickly, they're not going to move them up, right?
No.
So I mean, they get from that, they get what almost 9 days to rest, and we'll see if Durant would be back.
Let's get to the lead story. We now put the lead in the 10th paragraph, but that's okay. What the game that Draymond Green played the other night. Now, I'm in no position. I'm not a greenologist. I'm a fan. I have been since Michigan State. I'm on record.
Is that even a thing, a greenologist?
I liked him. I liked him in the draft. I thought he was woefully underdrafted and all that. Okay. I said, if he's played too many better games, I can't believe it. And then Kerr came out and said it was probably his best game or among the very, very best games he's ever played, which is saying a lot. That was a virtuoso performance of how to play this game of basketball. And by the way, and I think there's not the slightest dispute, and I applaud the broadcast crew for making a point of it. Absent his energy and enthusiasm and drive and skill in the first half, they have no chance of winning this game or getting back in the game. None. He's
Mitch,
the only thing they had going for them for a frighteningly long stretch of the first half.
Mitch, you have watched him far longer, at least more closely, starting in college than Bob and I have. I don't think that's even in dispute. Is there any doubt in your mind that Draymond Green is a happier and better teammate without Kevin Durant on the floor?
No question. I mean, a blind man could see that. But he's not going to throw Kevin Durant off the team either, because if they're going to win with them, they'll win with them. He's another case where, when needed, he'll step up. Now, I know he's done some knucklehead things in his career, and he has that, the same knuckleheadedness that leads him to ill-timed technicals is also the joy and the passion that allows him to have the kind of games that he had, and the fire that you just referenced, Bob, in the first half that kept them going when they were fell behind by 18 points. That line, there's sometimes where a game performance is much better than the line, and sometimes when the line is much better than the actual game performance. And then there's a few times where they line up perfectly. Shoots 50% from the field, has 20 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists, 4 steals, and only 2 turnovers and 3 fouls. And the only 2 turnovers and 3 fouls is important too, because sometimes he does dumb things when he fouls, and sometimes he turns the ball over with some very questionable decisions. And to handle the ball that much, to score 20 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists, and only have 2 turnovers and all that in 38 minutes of play, Steph might be right, given the timing of it all and given the fact that they basically closed out the Western Conference Finals by winning that game. You give Portland some life, who knows? But I think they're done now. So yeah, I think that was Draymond Green's maybe greatest game, and he's capable of doing that. And yes, Mike, to end on answering your question, he's more likely to do it when Kevin Durant is on a bench or someplace else than he is when Kevin Durant.
It's crazy though, isn't it? Because Mitch, again, I'll just stay, Bobby, I just want to stay with Mitch for one more second. It's almost like Kevin Durant pisses him off that he just in Draymond's mind, and I'm not trying to get into the mind of Draymond Green. It's like he liked his team a lot better before Durant showed up.
Well, think about it. I mean, this is not, you know, I don't mean to be armchair psychiatrist here, but Draymond Green has a lot more to do and is a lot more integral to the game when it's not a dump it to Kevin Durant and let him back a guy in or pull up and hit a three-pointer. What does Draymond have to do in cases like that? You know, Draymond keeps balls alive with rebounding. You know, he muscles in. He sets good screens. You know, he's physical. That's not required so much when you can just toss the ball to Durant and he can look at a guy and hold it up and step in and pull back and hit a three and everybody else is watching. So now, is that reason enough not to like him? Or not? No, I think there's other factors that step into it. And you know what? One of those factors is that loyalty thing. And this is an off-season story as much as it's an on-season story, because Draymond Green is a Golden State Warrior through and through. And Steph Curry is a Golden State Warrior through and through. And I don't think they think or know if Kevin Durant is a Golden State Warrior through and through. Obviously, he didn't start there, and he may not very well not finish there. And one thing I could tell you about Draymond, that goes back to Michigan State and coming from Michigan and all the rest of that stuff, loyalty's big. That's Tom Izzo's programs are like that. You know, they're all about loyalty and being part of that. Then once a Spartan, always a Spartan and all that kind of thing. And I think he has that mentality. And I think there's always been a part of him that wonders if Kevin Durant is buying into it or if he's just going where the championships are.
There's one other thing that he's been doing, according to all the written testimony to what's going on, is that he's been a tremendous leader. He's been pumping up the kids. He's been you know, acting as like the surrogate coach. He's been absolutely doing the job of, you know, in a positive way verbally, not a negative way verbally. So he's throwing that on top of the game. The game itself, if he were Kawhi Leonard, the silent man, and he were doing it, that'd be one thing. But he's not far from silent, and he seems to be channeling his energy and emotions in the right way for the time. And you know, this is it's pleasure. No, it's just a pleasure. That game, I mean, I was just excited watching.
It's almost like there's this attitude with Draymond, like, I'm sorry, I know how great you are, Kevin. You're just never going to be one of the cool kids here. And I wonder how much Draymond Green's attitude towards Durant actually filters through that locker room and all the way to Durant's locker. What do you think, Mitch?
Yeah, I there's no question about it. And that kind of stuff. Look, Steph Curry, like you said, Mike, got over himself a long time ago, you know, sure. and you need that with a guy of his talent in order for a guy like Draymond to say the kind of stuff that he says in the locker room and not have him roll his eyes. You know, he welcomes it. You know, good. Okay, go ahead, do that. I don't need to do it. So you do it. And Klay Thompson, I think, rolls with those kind of punches. Kevin Durant has been on, you know, Kevin Durant can always say, hey, you know, I'm the superstar in this team, and what's with the rah-rah crap? You know, and you know, he's, think about the dynamic of it. You were referring to cool kids in school. It's a high school dynamic. You know, it's really easy to pump up the guys until the cooler guy is in the room, and then if he doesn't want to listen to you, then everyone starts looking at him. So, you know, I don't want to get too much deep into this, because the fact is they're winning, and they won with Durant, and they won without Durant, and if Durant comes back, they're probably going to win again. I really don't think Toronto or Milwaukee will be able to beat them in a 7-game series. You know, I think there's a little bit of that for both of those teams will be, hey, we're just here. You know, wow, we're in the finals kind of thing. Whereas for Golden State, wow, we're in the finals doesn't mean anything. They will have an advantage in that. I think no matter which one of them wins, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, they're going to be on the road to start, right? This isn't going to be a Golden State doesn't start, right, with the record. So they're going to have to win a road game. But I think that's entirely possible with this group, and I think they'll win.
Are you starting to wonder, guys? Are you starting to wonder how bad he really is hurt, and if it's any kind of lock that we're going to see him during the finals?
Oh, I don't want to go there. I really don't. I don't want to go there.
Well, if they're telling the truth, he ought to be able to come back for the finals.
But he did. Kerr did say that it's worse than they thought it was.
Yeah, but it, yeah, well, that's clear. That's why he's not playing. There was also.
I want to throw a little.
Well, let me just finish this thought. Yeah, I also think there's a little bit of we don't really need him to beat Portland. And, you know, they'll never say that out loud, but I think they know it. And so why rush him back? But if he gets really gets nine days before he has to play, yeah, and it's really a calf injury, he ought to be back, or else they're lying about what the injury is.
No, I think it's very evident that they know and believe they don't need him to beat Portland. I just want to throw in one more little kudo for a person who was growing up before his fans' eyes, his team's eyes, and is making, you know, not every night major, but some nights really important contributions. Kevin Looney, about whom I really knew very little. And I, you know, and just for the sake of argument here, I'll throw this out there because I just educated myself 10 minutes ago. Yeah, you know, he's from UCLA. He was a draft pick after 1 year. Was hurt. He's got two rings already, but he has made zero contribution to those rings, you know, other than practice play. But he was hurt, hip problems, if not. He's giving them at times
really big minutes. Really,
what they need. Yeah, what they need. That's all.
Right. Can I just throw?
That's all. So congratulations to you, Kevin Looney. No.
Can I just circle back to number 30, please? Because you tell me which other superstar in sports would so graciously and willingly defer to another player the way he clearly does with Kevin Durant having this much game inside him.
Yeah.
No, it's a tribute. The admiration knows no bounds for everything about the way he's carried himself. And
Is he a big moment guy? Oh, my Lord.
Oh.
I mean, come on.
When you look back, when they get done, after they dispatched, you know, Milwaukee and, you know, in five or six, and we look back and we're going to focus on highlights of the playoffs, and we're going to say the 33-point second half is going to be right up the top.
Kind of.
16 points in the last final 4 minutes of that game.
Kronos knows that hiring and retaining a modern workforce of salaried, hourly, full, and part-time workers can be challenging, especially in today's competitive job market. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and time in one place. So HR professionals supporting a blended workforce have all the tools they need to engage and motivate their people every step of the way. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Let's move on to a great sports drama yesterday.
Mike's been dying. We
lead with what we think is the most important stories, but there was a big story out of golf yesterday. And guys, I will start here. It was so much more interesting to me and so much a better a victory for Brooks Koepka that it wasn't just a walk through Bethpage Black, that it wasn't just a coronation. When that lead got down from one, Zach Lubicka had been out with his friends. He went out for a little while. He says, Dad, what happened? We just walked down to the beach. I said, he made four bogeys in a row. I said, you know what happened, Zach? Sports happened. And then for all the birdies he's made and all the big putts he's made on his way to winning four of the last eight major championships, okay, when he had to make a swing and put the ball in the fairway on number 15 when he was in a free fall and a seven-stroke lead was down to one, he hit one 350 yards in the fairway, made a routine par, made another routine par, missed a short putt on 17. I'm telling you, he was as much a champion over that hour yesterday as he had been in the 68 holes before that.
You know, he's almost creepy in terms of he's an automaton. You know, we know he doesn't show you emotion.
I love watching him play,
Bob. The way he talks. Oh, I'm just saying though, it's watching like a golf machine, a golf robot.
And he doesn't
dish what we want to hear. Although I still come back to what he said, what he was quoted as saying on the morning of the first round, what he was quoted as saying, which was half the field has no chance in these matters, you know, ever. And then basically trashing another large percentage of his competitors without spelling out C-H-O-K-E. He was saying it and damning everyone, the rest of these guys, that they're going to choke. They can't handle this. The majors are only for, you know, the chosen few.
And then he unchoked yesterday.
Of whom I am one.
Yep.
And then he went out and shot a 63. That is sprinting, not talking. Not walking the dog. That is sprinting.
Mitch, wasn't it great watching him weather the storm?
It was, weather the wind. You know, that wind really affected everybody's play, Dustin Johnson included. And as much of a story, and we'll get to it in a second because I don't want to get off of Koepka, but Dustin Johnson's inability to close out when he had an opportunity there.
Gee, that's never
starting,
happened before.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's starting to become, you know, the first page of his
kind of
press
a thing,
release.
Mitch. Kind
yeah.
of a thing.
And that's concerning for him. But, you know, what I started thinking when he won that, the minute he won it, or the minute it looked like he was going to win it, was if he had won the Masters, how would people be talking? I mean, look how close he came there. And
one ball in the water on number 12.
Ball in the water. And all of a sudden, he would, instead of having won four of his last eight majors, he would have won five of his last eight majors. And people would be starting to do the, you know, math. On, okay, he's 29, he's got five, how long before he catches? Forget about Jack, because we all see how hard that is, but could he surpass Tiger? You know, because generationally, that's who gets compared, and the two of them playing together at the beginning of the week was fascinating to watch, and, you know, and I give him some credit for that, too. I mean, I still think the guys will all say, well, Tiger Woods is, you know, he's another golfer to us, he's a great golfer, but he's another, no, he isn't. You know, when you are paired with Tiger Woods, you have to man up. You've got to face if at the very least the crowds and all the people yelling, and then the whole idea of you know, am I going to get embarrassed by this guy? And not only did he not get embarrassed, but he embarrassed himself. And that speaks to the same
you
thing
mean
you're talking
about.
You mean
because he beat him by 17 shots yeah, over? Yeah, yeah, wait,
exactly.
Mitch, are you saying that because he played him straight up and beat him? Wait a minute, let me say that again. By 17 shots yeah. over 36 holes.
But that takes a certain ballsiness. The same kind of thing that Bob was talking about. I'm not just going to keep even with you. I'm going to stuff you.
Oh.
And I like that. I like that in golf. You know, I like to see it. So, yeah, he looks a little bit like an automaton when he plays, Bob, but not with when he talks and not
with his
attitude.
I love when he talks, Mitch, don't you? I love the stuff he says. Hey, Bob, did you go to either one of the majors at Bethpage Black?
0-2.
Okay, so if you've walked that course, Mitch, even as hard as it looks on television, it's harder than that, okay? There are tees that you stand on there and you think, oh my God, he's going to have to hit his best drive just to get it to the friggin' fairway, okay?
Mike, that was the big issue I recall above all things when the first one in 2002 was the idea that, and the practice
the carries,
revealed
yeah.
that there were people who were not reaching the landing area. They
yep.
were not out driving the rough to get to the fairway. That's me, you know, these are.
And here's the thing about Tiger. And we don't want to make this a Tiger discussion because he doesn't even factor into what happened over the weekend. Okay. He cannot win on courses like that. He will never win on courses like that. He might be able to win another Masters or play a British Open where you do not get penalized for hitting the ball off the fairway. Other than that, it wasn't just Brooks Koepka who beat him up. The golf course beat up Tiger Woods over the first 2 days. But getting back to yesterday, okay. I couldn't believe that everything we had seen from this kid, especially the way he had grinded out the Open at Shinnecock Hills last year, that he was going to turn into Greg Norman. But by God, it was Greg Norman against Faldo. A thousand years ago, it was Arnold Palmer blowing a big lead on the back nine of the Open at Olympic in 66 against Billy Casper. And again, for him, for all the talk he had about other guys choking, he was choking there. And he kind of said it himself. And it's, guys, how much sports have we covered? It's hard to unchoke, okay? And that is what we saw starting on the 15th tee. It was, to me, it was thrilling yesterday.
Well, he had some help in unchoking in that the guy who could have taken him down choked even worse. And, you know, if Dustin Johnson, first of all, the Faldo Norman comparison is great, except I believe they were playing together.
Oh, of course they were. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And if Dustin Johnson is playing with him instead of a hole ahead of him, I would have loved to have watched
me
that.
Me too. I said the same thing to my kid, Mitch, what you just said. I said to my boys last night, the only thing that would have made this more dramatic is if they're best friends, if they had played with each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's out of their control. But you know, when Dustin Johnson birdies the 15th,
yep.
and he's in this great position, And then he comes right back and bogeys 16 and 17.
Flies
and
the green for no Mitch, didn't it look like his swing was in sync? He's knocking everything 10 to 15 to 20 feet from the hole. And all of a sudden, and Koepka hit a shot like this himself where the wind just, you know, stopped. Okay, and he flew a green too, but that shot was so stunning. But man, whether it's a 3-foot putt out of Chambers Bay, whether it's a missed putt at Augusta, he does find a way to sabotage himself, as gifted a golfer as he so clearly is.
Well, he's a member of that very ignoble club now. What are they calling it? The majors second place sweep. He's finished second now in every major.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that that's a title that you want to be walking around with, unless you also say, I finished first in every major, and then, you know, I'm either first or second. But you don't want to just be second. And you know, he needs to – this is going to haunt him. I was surprised when they did his press conference or his interview afterwards. You know, one of the things that rubs you the wrong way about Tiger Woods, but also you understand – is part of what makes him great, is that he's constantly sort of, even when he finishes 12th, he's talking like, all I had to do was do this and do this and I would have won it. Dustin Johnson seemed perfectly content with finishing second. You know, like, hey, I played as well as I could, you know, and I couldn't catch him, and, you know, I tried to do this, but this didn't happen. He needed to be angrier. I mean, he just let one slip away there, and I look for that in post-game comments right after it happens to see how upset guys are.
And Mitch, not only did he let one slip away, he let slip away what would have been the greatest comeback in the history of major championships.
Yeah.
That's what he let slip away. And he said, you know, I thought I played pretty well. And I'm thinking, how did you enjoy the show, Mrs. Lincoln?
Right. The point is to come back to win it, not to come back and finish in second place.
Yeah. I don't want to keep replaying the Masters, okay? But you're 100% right. We ought to be talking about 5 out of 8. Nothing to take away from what Tiger did, okay? Brooks Koepka will never make that mistake on 12 again. He still came back with an eagle. He still burned the cup for birdies on 17 and 18. And what conversation are we having? Oh, I know. We're having a Grand Slam conversation if he had won Augusta.
Well, yeah. Plus, you're not talking about Tiger Woods. So, you know, everybody's focusing on him. Now, you know this better than me. Project ahead. 4 majors at age 29 for a major a major concentrating guy him. Is he set up in any way to, is that on track to pass Tiger by the time he's in his 40s?
15 is so many, but he is the first guy since Tiger. And I love Jordan Spieth, his early speed. I loved Rory McIlroy's early speed. He is the first guy since Tiger that I can see as a double-digit major champion. And again, he's you know, they keep talking about this. He's a beast. He's Brandel Chamblee was talking about how even Hogan could looked into the future with his classic book, Five Lessons, okay? And he said, imagine if a giant could do all the things we're talking about in this book. Well, that giant has come along now, okay? And I love his attitude where he kind of says, you know, I'm not like playing football. It's just golf, you know? I mean, he seems to have a great perspective. And all these people who think he's dull, all I can say is Tiger was never the life of the party. His golf made him interesting. His ethnicity made him interesting. His flair made him interesting. But how can you not love what this kid's doing?
Yeah. Well, he's arresting, and he's certainly going to be carrying a big story into the U.S. Open next month. I love the way they've reset this calendar now. You got something to look at every single month, and it'll be fascinating to see him and of course, Tiger and Phil and everybody else talk about at the U.S. Open.
Time for our parting shots, and since Mitch said, how come we're not talking about the Lakers? I said, well, I kind of got it as a parting shot. I will lead off today.
Now parting shots.
Forget about Hard Knocks, Mitch, as a reality series out of sports. I want the Lakers to be a reality series starting right now. We can call it Los Angeles 90015 just because the way things are going, that might be the next year when the Lakers win an NBA championship. Now you've got Magic Johnson, who used to be the guy in charge of the basketball operation, accusing Rob Pelinka, who somehow is still the general manager of the team, of backstabbing. You've got the suggestion that Kurt Rambis is somewhere behind the curtain helping Jeannie Buss call the shots because Rambis' wife is Jeannie's bestie. And then there's been the suggestion that Phil Jackson, oh, who, by the way, happens to be Jeannie's ex-boyfriend, is also in the mix somewhere. And through it all, you still got LeBron, who wanted to go to L.A. in the worst way and then went to L.A. in the worst way possible. There hasn't been this much soap opera in Lakerville since Kobe and Shaq were in couples counseling. They remind me of an old line Ron Darling once used about a soap opera baseball team, the Mets of the 1980s. We spend an awful lot of time around here worrying about everything except winning the game.
Can a person be excommunicated from a sports community? We may be about to find out. I reside in Greater Boston. I have made Boston my home since 1964. I am now taking a deep breath. Okay, here goes. The New York Yankees are currently the most admirable team in American sport. There, I said it. They currently reside in first place in the American League East. They are doing it without their projected first baseman, shortstop, third baseman, and two slugging outfielders on whom they were counting for somewhere between 90 and 105 home runs. They are doing it without an all-star reliever and at least three members of their expected starting rotation. They are doing it with people known only to the type of Baseball America subscribers who read every line of the paper. They have had a total of 17 players on the injured list. If I were a Yankee fan, I'd be so proud. I offer my congratulations. Excuse me now while I place my house on the market and prepare to enter the Sports Writers, Sportcasters, and Podcasters Witness Protection Program.
Sunday had the final round of the PGA and the double overtime third game in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the fact is, the biggest sporting event of the weekend was the finale of Game of Thrones. Think about it. Everyone was rooting for someone to lose and for someone to win. Sounds like sports, right? And you had two superstars, Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen, facing off at center court where only one could win. And by now we all know who that was. A kiss and a knife took care of that. And in the end, as often happens in sports, it wasn't the biggest name who got the winning shot, but the guy at the end of the bench, Little Bron the Broken, who calmly gets the biggest prize and sums it up with the sentence, "Why do you think I came all this way? Da-da-da." Just like sports, there was cheering, there was booing, there were cries of foul. In fact, the Game of Thrones finale had every single thing a major sporting championship has except one. When it was over, no one got to yell, "Wait till next year." That's going to wrap it up for today's Sports Supporters podcast. We should do a whole podcast on the Game of Thrones thing someday. We do this every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back here again on Thursday. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends. They can find this podcast anywhere you find popular podcasts, including the Stitcher platform. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.